first of all, she has the right to do whatever she wants as long as she's feeling okay and she's not hurting anyone. Besides that, what's the need of people coming this stereotypical model of what
they were assuming she had owned the tortilla place because of what she was wearing.
Exactly. Yeah. The views expressed in this podcast do not represent the views of the Organization of American States, its Secretary General, or its member states. We invite you to keep listening to find more of this new episode.
Welcome back to The Zone Podcast, a podcast that serves as a platform for constructive dialogue amongst those of us who live in the adjacency zone on relevant issues with local perspectives presented by young people from Belize and Guatemala under the coordination of the OAS office in the adjacency zone with the support of the Spanish Agency for International Development Cooperation. Today's conversation focuses on the cultural rights of indigenous people. We'll be discussing in our first segment the global framework on the rights of indigenous people.
That's right. First, we will be focusing the lens on the region. We will explore indigenous rights in the Latin America and Caribbean through the Inter-American Commission of Human Rights. Later, we'll be focusing our conversation on our own countries, Belize and Guatemala.
Yeah, I think it's really important for us to be having this conversation and sharing important information with our wonderful audience. These discussions are necessary to better understand the reality faced by indigenous people globally and locally.
For starters, let us try to provide a concept of what are indigenous people for our audience.
Right, so that's really interesting since there's not an internationally agreed definition or concept on what is and what is not indigenous. Having said so, the United Nations has developed a modern understanding of the term based on the following: self-identification as indigenous people at the individual level and accepted by the community as their member. Historical continuity with pre-colonial and or pre-settler societies. Strong links to territories and surrounding natural resources. Distinct social, economic, and political systems. Distinct language, culture, and beliefs. Form non-dominant groups of society, resolve to maintain and reproduce their ancestral environments and systems as distinctive people and communities.
Okay, that's right. Now, above all, most fruitfully approach is to identify rather than define indigenous people. This is based on the first criteria you share with us and underlined in several human rights documents.
Globally, the United Nations estimates that there are more than 370 million indigenous people spread across 70 countries, which represent over 5,000 different indigenous people around the world.
Yes, and actually they have their own unique traditions, retain social, cultural, economic, and political characteristics that are distinct from those of the dominant society in which they live.
I'd also like to highlight that, like everyone else, indigenous people have all of their rights set out in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Nonetheless, indigenous people have specific rights due to their unique position as first people of their nation.
Yes, that's totally correct. No, indigenous people do have unique rights that help ensure that their culture continue to exist into the future. So this includes the right to speak and teach their native language and customs, to live in the land of their ancestors, and to look after their sacred sites.
This is immensely important even nowadays, since often due to lingering effects of colonization and oppression, indigenous people are always vulnerable to discrimination and mistreatment and excluded from effectively participating processes that affect their rights.
So indeed, and this is very sad, because that means that today indigenous people are more likely to experience poverty, imprisonment, poor health, and restriction of self-determination.
Touching back on what we just covered, I think it's really interesting and lovely to know that they also have the same laws as everyone else does, and also special laws that pertain specifically to their cultures and heritage. But I still think that we need to work more because, like we just mentioned, a lot of them are being excluded from a lot of the actions and laws that take place that really affect their communities and where they live, especially within the environment. I know that a lot of indigenous people, they are very connected to nature, and it's really not okay when you know, laws are created that go against their ways of living, really, because a larger company could come in and say, this land is mine, I bought it for this much money. But when in reality, you don't know the certain lifestyle that they have to live in order to, like, be one with that harmony. It just, like, takes away from it. They're just being excluded from a lot of the conversations that go around what happens to where they live.
Yeah, I mean, and it's really sad, the fact that they have special laws. Imagine, you need to have special laws so that people can respect your own culture. So if you think that way, it's also sad, the fact that we need to put some laws so that people start respecting their own cultures for all indigenous people.
And more indigenous activists and descendants have been, you know, becoming more educated and speaking up on behalf of their communities, which I think is something really to be amazed at.
So now, what if we focus now on the international framework protecting indigenous rights?
Sure thing. We should start by highlighting that indigenous people have existed since before the constitution of current systems of nation states we have today. Nonetheless, indigenous rights and issues affecting indigenous issues started to be recognized and set in local, regional, national, and international agendas not long ago.
Did you know that the first international involvement with indigenous people in Western law bodies occurred when leaders in 1923 and 1925 traveled to Geneva to speak to the League of Nations and defend the rights of their people to live under their own laws, their own lands, and their own faith? Even though they were not allowed to speak, their vision nourished the generations that follow.
In 1981, the United Nations Special Rapporteur of the Subcommissions on Prevention of Discrimination and Protection of Minorities launched a study on the problem of discrimination against indigenous populations.
This study outlined the oppression, marginalization, and exploitation suffered by indigenous people. This started the draft that later constituted the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People.
Thus, indigenous people and their rights are protected at the international level in the framework of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which was adopted by the General Assembly in 2007.
The declaration addressed both individual and collective rights, cultural rights and identity rights to education, health, employment, language, and others.
The declaration states that indigenous people have the right to fully enjoy, as a collective or as individuals, all human rights and fundamental freedoms as recognized in the Charter of the United Nations, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and the rest of the international human rights laws.
Also, indigenous people and individuals are free and equal to other people and other individuals. They have the right to be free from any kind of discrimination in the exercise of their rights that are based on their indigenous origins and identity.
Yeah, I think it's really cool that they have all of these rights. In terms of the discrimination, I definitely think that there are evidence still evident today in society. I know that a lot of workplaces have strict uniform rooms. I know even TV shows have done a good job of portraying this, where you would have a woman go in with their traditional garments, like a hijab, and, you know, a workplace or school would even ask them to take it off because it's not work appropriate, which I definitely think should not be a case, because these are part of your tradition, this part of who you are, and it's also respecting who you are as a human being. Among other rights, indigenous people have the right to self-determination. By that right, they can freely determine their political status and pursue their economic, social, and cultural development. They have the right to maintain and strengthen their distinct political, legal, economical, social, and cultural institutions while retaining their rights to participate fully, if they choose to, in the political, economic, social, and cultural life of the state.
Some highlights of the declaration that we would like to share with our audience are that 17 of 45 articles of the declaration deal with indigenous culture and how to protect it and promote it by respecting the direct input of indigenous people in decision making and allowing for resources such as those of education in indigenous languages and other areas.
And the declaration recognizes that indigenous people deprived of their means of subsistence and development are entitled to just and fair redress.
Essentially, the declaration outlaws discrimination against indigenous people, promote their full and effective participation in all matters that concern them, as well as their right to remain distinct and to pursue their own visions of economic and social development.
Thanks so much for summarizing the spirit of the Declaration. Although I'm sure our audience is wondering how the rights contained in this Declaration are upheld and protective, within the international framework, there are two bodies of entities designed to monitor the application of the Declaration.
This is correct. On one hand, we have the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, a high-level advisory body which provides expert advice and recommendation on indigenous issues to the United Nations systems, and which promotes respect and fully application of the provisions contained in the Declaration.
So on the other hand, we have the Special Rapporteur of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples from the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner on Human Rights. This figure was created to promote good practices, policies, and a program between indigenous people and states to implement the international standards concerning the rights of indigenous people.
Moreover, it addressed specific cases of alleged violation of indigenous people's rights. The report on the human rights situation of indigenous people around the world.
Thanks so much for that. And having explored the global legal framework, on our next segment, we'll be exploring the regional situation of indigenous people in Latin America and Caribbean regions.
For that, we'll be introducing the regional organization with a mandate to monitor the human rights situation of indigenous people in the Americas and the Caribbean.
That's correct. We're talking about the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, an autonomous organization of the Organization of American States, whose mission is to promote and protect human rights in the American hemisphere. Before with that, we want to leave you with the following material to highlight the indigenous people's rights and their knowledge in conservation. We hope you'll enjoy it. We'll be back soon.
It's the danger of forgetting that is the road to extinction.
Our salmon are endangered species now. The Winnemowintu would also be on the endangered species list. As the salmon reduce in number, so do the Winnemowintu.
I came to Congress to plead the case of Kalash tribe, which is endangered due to climate change. The community is 6,000 years old and only about 4,000 people. The whole community is at risk of being wiped out.
Respect for that traditional ecological knowledge, unlocking opportunities to learn from people who continue to live close to these landscapes, is an opportunity for all of us to boost our knowledge of what's happening with this planet.
Knowledge is not just academic. The knowledge that comes through being in one place all this time is different than when somebody comes in and studies it for 5 years or even 20 years.
I'm representing 100 of years of indigenous traditional knowledge. For us, it's very important to see how the younger generation can protect more the environment, but how all this knowledge can be protected to protect us and to protect our future.
Los pueblos indígenas en el mundo sabemos cómo vivir en armonía con nuestra madre tierra, porque respetamos, porque entendemos de que es necesario mantener el equilibrio, la armonía.
Let us remember that what was once an oppressed voice is now the intellectual speech of the landscape. I believe for tomorrow, for our grandchildren and your great-great-grandchildren, it will be a vibrant one because we are committed to making it so.
Es importante generar un cambio ya, porque no tenemos mucho tiempo. Nosotros estamos luchando para que se genere ese cambio y el mundo, la UICN y los miembros tienen que darse cuenta que un cambio es urgente.
What a wonderful video. I really like the way it highlights the role of indigenous people in conservation. The line in there where the woman was talking about the importance of indigenous people and their connection to Mother Nature really hit home. I loved her outlook on it.
I totally agree with you. It was a really nice video. It was wonderful. Now, we must also remember that indigenous people are the forefront of climate change and the first affected. So we should do something to fight climate change and raise the voice of these indigenous people of our nations.
Well said. As we discussed previously, we'll focus on the human rights situation of indigenous people in the Americas and the Caribbean.
According to the Economic Commission for Latin America and the Caribbean, by 2010, there was an estimate of 45 million indigenous people living in Latin America, accounting for 8.3% of the region's population.
These 45 million indigenous people represent 826 indigenous people. An additional 200 are estimated to be living in voluntary isolation.
Just to clarify our term to our audience, and this I should say that is just mind-blowing, when we refer to indigenous people living in voluntary isolation, we talk about uncontacted people, which are communities or groups of indigenous people living without sustained contact to neighbors and communities and the world community.
It really is mind-blowing, and we must respect their decision to continue with their traditional ways of living, aside from the westernized model brought up upon their lands after the arrival of colonial and settler societies.
And this self-isolation, I do think that it's more like a protective way so that they can keep their traditions and their culture without being affected by the outsiders, which is us. And we have a great example, which was back when the colonizers came to America, and then they were obligated to change their own traditions. They were even obligated to learn Spanish, because since it was most Spanish colonizers, they didn't understand their own language and they didn't like them to speak their native language. Mm-hmm. And there's a really good book that explains a lot of how it was back when the colonizers were just coming to America, which is called La Patria del Criollo. Normally in Guatemala, we do study this book a lot in university and some even in high school. So this gives us more of the story of how it was being an indigenous people back when the colonizers just came to America.
Oh, really interesting. I definitely think that some of these aspects still are around today. I don't know. So I definitely respect them for continuing to want to live out in their traditional ways in self-isolation. Because even if you look at a lot of our societies today, you know, I'm also an example of that. I unfortunately don't speak as much Spanish as my grandparents do, or like I would celebrate, you know, holidays that aren't really traditional to the Belizean tradition because of outside influences as well. And it's not just me, it's a lot of people who really follow in the footsteps of like the Western model, like we just mentioned. And I totally respect all of these indigenous people for just wanting to preserve that as much as possible. So lots of lessons we could take from the indigenous communities.
Yes, most definitely. I agree with you. And I mean, the fact that they are fighting just to keep their own traditions shouldn't even be a fight, to be honest. Now, we would like to introduce to our audience to the regional framework protecting the rights of indigenous people in the Americas and the Caribbean. For this, we will introduce to our audience in the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, a principal and autonomous organ of the Organization of American States, with the mission to promote and protect human rights in the Americas and the Caribbean.
The commission was actually created in 1959 and its headquarters in Washington, D.C., together with the Inter-American Court of Human Rights, the Commission is one of the institutions within the Inter-American system for the protection of human rights.
So, the mandate of this commission includes, among others, to develop an awareness of human rights among people of America. For that end, the Commission prepare and publish reports on specific issues among others indigenous people.
For instance, in the 2022 report on the right to self-determination of indigenous and tribal people, the commission highlights important advances at the regional level in the recognition of the rights of indigenous people.
That's right. Now, some advances include, for example, the adoption of the American Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People of the Organization of American States, which recognized the right of indigenous people to self-determination.
Likewise, in more recent decades, the constitution and legislation of several American states have given varying degrees of recognition to the rights to autonomy and self-determination, while in other states, rights to autonomy, self-government, and/or self-determination are contained in treaties and agreements between indigenous people and states from colonial times to the present.
However, The report also noticed that despite the recognition of this right at the international level, and in some states, indigenous people still face challenges in being able to exercise it in practice.
The main issue, perhaps, is the lack of understanding of the connection between self-determination and other fundamental rights, such as the rights to their land, territories, and natural resources. This episode may have been a bit more technical than others, but the reason being that we do want to make all of these indigenous environments aware that these are the rights that they have and that are offered to them. A lot of times they're not aware of what they can stand up for themselves for. So it's definitely why we want to properly cover all the grounds of and areas into which they're acknowledged regionally, and internationally, and globally.
Yes, we really hope that you can take the best from this episode and that you learn. If you have any questions, you can also let us know on the comment. In another report, in the human rights situation of indigenous women in America, the commission documented the ways in which indigenous women have historically faced prejudice based on the multiple facets of their identities.
The commission determined that a combination of factors such as racism, sexism, poverty, and the structural and institutional inequalities stemming from them, as well as human rights violations related to their territories and the natural resources contained therein, heighten indigenous women's vulnerability to violation of their rights.
This is totally disheartening because of all those sorts of discrimination against indigenous women combined create layers of mutually reinforcing human rights violation.
Besides the challenges they face, we want to highlight that indigenous women make up a unique contribution and play fundamental roles within their families, their communities, as well as the international level.
That's right. Now, indigenous women are the guarantors of their culture and play a major role in the movement to protect and respect indigenous rights.
This is a very interesting topic indeed, and I think we could dedicate the following episode to explore it in much more detail.
Before moving to the next segment, the main takeaway I would like to share with our audience is that we must remain understanding and aware of the situation faced by the First Nations of our countries, raise their voices and contribute to their fights, and be a true ally.
Yeah, that's really powerful. And as you just mentioned, in a very interesting term, and for our audience, First Nation is a modern label for ancestrally indigenous people. But besides that, I fully agree with what you just mentioned. We must seek ways to contribute and advocate in favor of the rights of indigenous people, always remembering to put indigenous people and their issues at the center because it is their fight, and we are the ones who have to help and support them, not to substitute them in their fight or take their narratives.
Thank you so much for sharing this information with us. Now, moving on to our next segment, we would like to briefly highlight some practice in pro of the culture rights of the indigenous people from our countries.
But before that, we want to leave you with the following material highlighting the cultural manifestation of the indigenous people of Belize, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Mexico that we will discuss in our next segment.
Cuando yo juego, no siento que yo sea el que juegue. Hay una energía que te atrapa, te encierra. Nosotros decimos que dejamos el cuerpo. Los que van a jugar van a ser los abuelos que se van a manifestar en nuestro cuerpo. Cuando yo juego, paso una puerta y entro a mi mundo.
De la Asociación de Juego de Pelota Mesoamericana. La pelota se juega únicamente con la cadera y se trata de llevar la pelota en una línea y tratar de pasarla por el medio, y en cada cancha tiene que haber jugadores que son representaciones, elementos que se van jugando en la cancha, constelaciones, el sol, la tierra, los cuatro elementos.
La pelota pesa 3,800 kilos, pero ya cuando la pelota viene a distancia y a velocidad, ya no son 3,800 kilos, ya son 7 kilos.
Mi nombre es Willy Canché. Soy de acá del pueblo de Ekbalam. Soy un jugador de pelota.
Para empezar un juego ceremonial, se tiene que pedir permiso a los cuatro rumbos del universo. Tenemos que pedir permiso a la Madre Tierra, la energía de la Tierra, para que podamos salir sin daños, para que no nos pase nada malo. Y pues yo me imagino cuando estoy en ese juego cómo lo hacían mis antepasados, y es como conectarse con alguno de nuestros abuelos. Uno te guía, como uno de ellos nos está guiando para jugar. El juego tenía muchos aspectos. Está la parte religiosa, la parte deportiva y la parte militar. El problema fue aquí que vino la prohibición de muchas cosas.
A la llegada de los españoles y nos ven jugar con una pelota tan pesada, solamente con la cadera, nos empiezan a ver como si fuéramos brujos. Ver unas personas casi desnudos jugar con una pelota tan pesada y que le pegaran con la cadera o le pegaran en cualquier otra parte del cuerpo y no les hiciera nada, para ellos adorábamos demonios.
Si solamente nos hubiésemos descubierto así, sin invadirnos, sin prohibirnos nada, hubiésemos sido el deporte más famoso del mundo.
So as we mentioned before, we would like to briefly highlight some practices in favor of the cultural rights of the indigenous peoples of our countries. But before doing so, we would like to provide our audience with some broadened texts about indigenous people in Belize and Guatemala.
In the case of Guatemala, according to the figures from 2018 census conducted by the Guatemalan National Institute of Statistics, Guatemala has a population of 14.9 million inhabitants, where 6.5 million, which is a 43.75%, on which self-identify as indigenous, from the Maya, Garifuna, the Xinka indigenous people, or Creole.
That is really interesting data, and according to the data that we share from the Economic Commissions for Latin America and the Caribbean, Guatemala is the Latin American country with the highest percentage of indigenous people in the region.
That's right. Now, the Maya people from Guatemala can be divided into 24 different groups, some of which include the Mopan, the Itza, the Mam, the Mopan, and the Kekchikel.
So in the case of Belize, according to the Statistical Institute of Belize, by 2010, Belize had a population of 325,000 people with two major indigenous groups, one being the Maya and the second one being the Garifuna, which represent 11.3% and 6.1% of the national population.
Yes, and today there are three Maya groups in Belize, named as the Yucatec, the Mopan, and the Quechí. The first ones lived in Corozal, Orange Rock, and Cayo District, while later settled in Toledo District.
On the other hand, the Garifuna are an Afro-Indigenous community. The Garifuna have their own language and culture and are located predominantly in the southern towns of Punta Gorda and Dangriga, as well as the villages of St. Bites, Hopkins, Georgetown, and Boranco, with some Garifunas also living in Belize City and Belmopan.
Mayan Garifuna people in Belize and Guatemala are dependent on local natural resources to practice their culture and support their livelihood. While Mayas specialize in a subsistence agriculture known as milpa, a form of shifting cultivation, Garifuna have traditionally engaged in subsistence fishing and small-scale farming.
Both groups have depended on the land and natural resources, not only for their physical and economical survival, but also for their continuation of their spiritual lives and unique cultures.
Now that you mention it, we would like to also introduce some cultural practices that are kept by the indigenous groups of our countries.
Hey, that's a great idea. So we can start by referring to the video we just saw at the beginning of the segment. The video introduces the Poktapok, a traditional pre-Hispanic ball game, which in the Mayan culture was called Poktapok, as an onomatopoeia, as a reference to the sound produced when the rubber ball being used is bounced.
So the oldest testimony that we have of this game beyond the archaeological remains that revealed the space where it was practiced we found in the famous scrapbook of the Mayan culture, the Popol Vuh. This game has been practiced for over 2,000 years, and it was played from Central America to what is now known as Sinaloa, Mexico.
So Belize, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Mexico participate regularly in the Poctapoc World Tournament, an activity that brings together the countries that make up the center of the Mayan world. Belize came out as the world champion during the 2021 tournament, becoming its third consecutive Poctapoc world champion, having won in 2017 and 2019.
Once more, congratulations to Belize. I do think that this is such a great initiative to keep the sport alive. Now, I would like to focus on Guatemala. We want to share with you the Deer Dance.
Yeah, that's a really beautiful idea. So the Deer Dance is one of the most famous traditional folk dances of Guatemala. People dance it in at least 9 different departments. You know, what's curious about this is that we also have the dance of the deer in Belize in the Toledo district.
Oh, really? That's really nice. No, I did think that that's part of our shared cultural heritage. So Guatemala performed the dance of the deer with different on different dates and with different details as well. Each municipality celebrates with this dance on their respective patron day.
The dance of the deer has 26 dancers who start the process of rehearsing 1 or 2 months before presenting the dance. They spend this time purifying their body and their spirit.
So this dance represents the story of an ancient hunting ritual the Maya perform. They meant to hunt down deers to eat, but the process they must fight against other animals who want to eat the deer as well. So a lion and a tiger represent those animals. In the process, there are also some monkeys involved, which add a fun tone to the representation. The traditional dance ends with everybody being invited to eat some meat.
Thanks so much for highlighting our common cultural heritage, because Poctapoc is something that we both share in Belize and Guatemala.
And your comment just reminded me of a special episode in which we're working, which is based on the cultural heritage of the adjacency zone.
This is another great conversation. I hope this knowledge empowers our viewers to continue talking about these issues and further ask themselves what can be done to be of service to protection and promotion of indigenous rights.
This episode wouldn't have been possible without the support of the Spanish Agency of International Development Cooperation and the Organization of American States for the Space of Dialogue between Youth of Belize and Guatemala. We invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, as we put a lot of effort to creating each episode for you.
Bye-bye. Have a great rest of your day.